Chumba.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Hello and welcome to Contemplations, and that is going to be the last time I ever say that, because this is the end. This is me talking about a retrospective of my series. It's been, 3 years of my life that I've spent working on this series, so obviously an immense amount of time. And yes, it's not that I'm necessarily going anywhere as far as I'm aware. It's simply that within Los Cetus, I'm moving on to bigger and better things. And so expect, you know, more polished work. I can't quite spoil it yet. I think Carl is the one announcing what's going to be replacing it, but look forward to it. But I suppose it's going to be me navel gazing, talking about all the work that I've done, giving you some of the behind the scenes insight in the work that's gone into it, and my sort of thought processes. So if you're interested, as well as this being a sort of guide to 3 years of my work, you know, is 170 episodes in total. So this is going to be 171, I believe. And yeah, I hope you enjoy. But I suppose before I start talking about the actual series itself, I would like to, talk about my feelings about it ending. And I suppose the way I feel about it, and I've not written any notes, just so you know, it's from the heart. I don't want to be disingenuous, obviously. Yeah, I'm immensely proud of the work I've put out. I've really tried my hardest to communicate things as accurately as possible. And, you know, sometimes it's not always been as accurate as I would have liked. But in the confines of working in this industry, I feel like I did the best that I could with the resources I had, mostly in terms of time, because, of course, I had to make one every week. And sometimes I had even less time than that with sickness and holidays. So I've really worked my hardest to make sure that I've put out the best work for you, the audience. And, you know, when I initially started, it was for my behalf. I saw it as a means of being able to do deep dives into things and learn something about something. And it was sort of an extension of my academic study. But as time has gone on, I've sort of come around to the point of view that the main reason I'm doing it is for the audience's benefit, that I'm doing it for you guys. And you'll probably see a change in tone in Contemplations around that point of realization, because it started to become something where I felt like I needed to shoulder the burdens of what the audience needed. And I've not always been one to necessarily, you know, play up to what the audience want to hear. I have tried to tell people difficult truths that might not necessarily make me the most popular, but I think one of the responsibilities of someone in my position is that I have to tell you what you need to hear rather than what you want to hear, and that, you know, you have an ethical and moral responsibility to do those sorts of things. And so I may not have always picked the topics that may have got the most views and may have, you know, promoted my career, but I've done what I felt like was best. And I think that has come out of a certain amount of gratitude towards the people that made it possible, which is you guys. And I'm going to probably struggle to find words to express the gratitude for that opportunity. So, you know, the only reason that this show existed for as long as it did was because of the people at home. And so thank you very much. I wholeheartedly, you know, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for all of the support, the lovely words. I mean, I've still not really come to terms with the fact that I do this for a living. I never really thought I would have my own show or be doing this work that I do. And I've never taken it for granted, that's for sure. And I still have to pinch myself that this is what I do for a living. So the money that you give us to support Lotus Eaters has made this happen. And I express my sincerest thanks, and hopefully I've done you justice. I've really tried my hardest, and if I haven't, I'm ever so sorry. If there are things that you're unhappy with, I'm sorry that I failed, but I'm still proud of what I've done. I've done my best and I've covered things that I think have spanned vast topics. I've tried to dive as deep as possible into things that I thought were interesting or nourishing as a bit of an antidote to the depressingness that is modern politics. And so you may have noticed that I have a bottle of champagne here, and so this goes out to you, the audience, and I'm probably going to struggle to open this, so hopefully there'll be some editing magic. Oh, that was easy. It's almost like I've done this before. So I'm going to have a toast, I suppose, as well as drinking this as I go, you know, any excuse to drink at work. But I suppose to you, the people that made this possible, thank you very much. Well, with all of the sentimentality out of the way, I suppose I may as well go through what I've done. You know, I'm going to start from the very beginning, and I suppose the inception of Contemplations, and I'd be much remiss to, you know, not mention one of the people that were absolutely foundational to my series, and that is Hugo. Those of you who've been here since the beginning may remember him. He has obviously left the company since, but it was originally set up to be a replacement of the Weekend Podcast, which was something that went out on the main podcast channel that was a pre-record to cover the weekend slots, where we weren't putting out podcast slots because, you know, we were a small team. We couldn't work 7 days a week doing the live podcast because, you know, it was basically me, Hugo, Callum and Carl as the hosts. You know, we were the people that started presenting at Lotus Eaters. And so this was a replacement to that as a sort of more formal series. And it made perfect sense at the time. And so the very first one went out on the 13th of March 2021. So that was over 3 years ago now. And it almost seems like yesterday to me. I remember it so well. The first one was actually, we started off by doing two episodes each, one for each day. One would go out on Saturday, one on a Sunday, and they were an hour long each, where we would do a deep dive into a topic. And Hugo's first topic, because he was far more anarchic than me, I suppose, he wanted to look at city-states in European history and basically provide a proof of concept of you can have city-states, they do exist, it is possible because they existed in history. And actually, the modern countries that we know of today are more a product of the 19th century, really, in the nationalist movement than anything else. And so he was demonstrating the history here, and that was the first episode. And, you know, it was one of those things that it was a quintessentially Hugo way to start the series. And I think it's nice that he was the one to start it and I'm the one to end it out. It's a sort of poetic notion about it, you know, that it was a team effort from the beginning. He starts, I end. It seems nice to me. And I'm not going to summarize much beyond that. I mean, if you want to watch the episodes, they're there. They're not going anywhere. They're staying on the website, and you'll be able to watch them. And the second episode is The World of 10,000 States. And this was basically hypothesizing what the world would look like if there were a world of 10,000 states. And it's basically using the historic examples that we discussed in the previous one to see what the world would be like. And of course, Hugo's argument was that with lots of states, it's going to minimize the tyranny of the ability of a large state to tyrannize its population. And therefore, because these states are having to compete with one another, there's a sort of race to be the most appealing. And of course, if you like very parochial sort of ideas, it might not necessarily be appealing, but it makes perfect sense from an economic argument. And perhaps it could make sense, you know, you could say, we have this small area, we don't want anyone to come in, we're going to have a very strict border, it's basically going to be, you know, our very little own North Korea. You could have that. It was sort of an extension of the Hoppean principles of you have a community that you have formed and you're able to defend it. And my first entry into Contemplations was discussing AI. And this is something that I was interested in at university because my sort of interest in it came from my love of the film 2001 A Space Odyssey. And I nearly actually went into, you know, machine learning models and things like that, but from a psychologist's perspective, by going from having a notion of human consciousness and then sort of working it backwards, even though we don't understand human consciousness fully, we still have some understanding of what it is. And that's where my my sort of interest in the topic lies. So we were talking about the potential that artificial intelligence had, as in the future, and made predictions, some of which have actually come true already, as well as in the second episode, will superintelligent AI destroy humanity? And I think it was Nick Bostrom's book, Superintelligence, that was the basis for me covering that, just talking about these different scenarios that people have entertained about the intentions of AI and how in various ways it can bring about the ruination of humanity and things like that. However, I was quite optimistic. I felt like the nature of a superintelligent AI might mean that it may well be benevolent. It's only if we mess it up and make mistakes, you know, if we make a true superintelligent AI, as in it's got the best of human beings and it's simply more capable than us in every way, there's no reason to believe that it would want to crush us. Far from it, probably the opposite. And we discuss lots of various things, I suppose. And yeah, it's one of the early ones. You can kind of tell that, I mean, this was what I started on the 20th of November 2020, and this was March of 2021. I'd never done any presenting. I'd came straight from academia. And so you can probably tell that I had a bit more of a dry academic style than I do now. And you can kind of see that I didn't take to presenting particularly well. And yeah, I suppose, although the information is good, and perhaps the presentation is a little bit lacking in the early ones. But at the same time, I suppose it might be heartening to know that, you know, from this early beginning, I've come all this way, to give myself a bit of a pat on the back. You know, if I hadn't got better over 3 years, I'd be a bit upset at myself. But Hugo then went on to do these next two. Why are some countries poor and others rich? And this was looking at economic theory in economic development, based on the Why Nations Fail book, which was a business book of the year, as it's shown in the thumbnail in 2012. And as well as that, is democracy the key to development? And the long and short answer is no. Actually, there was a lot of economic development in monarchies as well. Again, this is sort of following on the work of people like Hopper and Rothbard, who argued that, you know, democracy isn't actually essential to economic development. Economic development does happen outside of democracies, even though perhaps there's a correlation between it. But we were just looking at examples throughout history and providing data and things like that. And you may also notice that in these days, John, who is our producer, was also doing the editing because we were such a small team. So he's credited there as well. And then there was my attempt at explaining Marx's life. And I felt like, although this had been pointed out by Thomas Sowell before me, that Marx's experiences in life sort of shaped his political beliefs, almost like the personal is political. Funny that. And I basically gave a history of Marx's life whilst also sort of speculating into how his life might have informed his subsequent beliefs that have obviously had very catastrophic effects for humanity. I actually remember a fair few comments saying that the presenting on this was so bad that we should re-record it. Which, if you did watch it, I'm sorry. I did my best, but I was still a bit awkward in front of the camera. Hey, it's not an easy job to do. And I mean, it's only, you know, over the past year or so that I'm even comfortable talking directly to a camera. I'm used to talking to a person, which is in part habit, but also it's a sort of, it almost feels a bit narcissistic to talk directly to a lens. You're getting no feedback. You're talking for ages and you kind of have to be, for want of a better way of putting it, a bit up your own ass to be comfortable immediately to talk directly to camera. sorry if you're watching and you were comfortable doing that, but it seems very counterintuitive to me. although I'm able to do it, you know, it's still not necessarily ideal. To my mind, I like having someone to talk with. I think it's a better dynamic. It's more interesting. And I find that I like to learn from the other person I'm talking to as I'm going along and seeing how they react to my sort of ideas. And it's weird to have ideas and, you know, wanting to see how people are going to respond without there necessarily being any feedback whatsoever. So in many ways, I find it, although it seems counterintuitive, much easier to present in front of, say, an audience or with co-presenters, because you get that feedback, you know how you're doing. And it's one thing that I actually noticed when comics in the pandemic were recording stand-up specials when there was no one there. They quite often mentioned in their stand-up how weird it was that there wasn't feedback, like their jokes were just not landing, or that it is kind of like that in a way. So moving on to another one of Hugo's is how voting systems determine political results. This is just, of course, talking about various voting systems. It's fairly self-explanatory. This is sort of stock political science stuff, as well as we went on to talk about in the following episode, which voting system is the best. And I was pretty flippant about, I can't even remember, I think it was single transferable vote. I don't really know what I think anymore about that, but that was from my days of studying politics in like school days. I did A-level politics, which if you're not from Britain, is basically from 16 to 18. And you know, A-levels I found were actually harder than going to university, which is weird. I suppose if you're paying real world money, all of a sudden they're more happy to let you pass. And then talking of things that we studied at university, because I believe Hugo studied politics at university, I didn't. So I always felt like the junior partner when talking about politics at the start. And obviously I've been doing this for such a long time now that I'm almost a bit jaded on politics. I feel like I'm confident in most topics to talk at length. It's not necessarily arrogance, just the sheer amount of work I put in, you know. Look at a picture of me now, or on camera right now, and look at a picture of me when I started. There weren't as many wrinkles. I looked much more fresh-faced. I don't think I had as many chins. Certainly didn't have these dark circles, you know. I was happy and fresh-faced, and, you know, 3.5 years of working at Lotus Eaters, I'm a husk. I've it's worn me down. And I'm sure all the booze I've had to get along the way probably hasn't helped. But my the 11th episode here, does personality predict our political views, was something I covered at university in my political psychology lectures. And so this is sort of bread and butter topic, very nice and easy. And so you can see when I started, I was doing topics that I felt very comfortable with, because of course you want to ease yourself into being a presenter. You want to feel comfortable, particularly when you're looking at sort of high level academic knowledge and you're doing it week to week. Although we're doing it bi-weekly, we also had, I was writing multiple articles a week, as well as being on the podcast. In fact, I spent I think it was maybe the first 6 months working at Lotus Eaters, where every waking minute of my day was spent dedicated to perfecting, you know, my craft, mostly learning stuff, making sure I was informed, because the whole reason I joined Lotus Eaters was that it was sold to me as, we're going to be an antidote to the mainstream media. We're going to, you know, end up writing articles that are actually factual. And so a lot of my time was actually spent researching the news and writing out articles myself, which were trying not to be biased. And we have since shelved that idea, which sounds terrible, but it turned out that there wasn't actually as much of an appetite in the audience for news in that format, where we write it out doing the best to be balanced. People didn't actually care about that. People wanted us to present what we thought, which is, I suppose, fair enough, but I kind of feel like there should have been a bit more of that today. But hey, things quite often go in a direction that not necessarily what you want, and that's life, unfortunately. But I, you know, obviously things have turned out pretty well, because look at this studio. We started off with Akilah Hughes money from Carl's defamation suit against Akilah. I can't remember how much it was exactly, but it wasn't a large sum of money that started the company. I was living in a very cheap apartment. I didn't even unpack my boxes because, you know, when we first started, we didn't even know whether things were going to last very long. It was kind of a risk. It was in the middle of the pandemic. So I thought, well, I'll only be sat at home. So I may as well be doing something. So it's a risk worth taking. And 3.5 years later, here I am. So I guess it worked. I don't know how, you know, we're going to fare in years to come, whether, you know, the regime's going to come after us. I think it's probably likely. And so I suppose savour it while it lasts. So another one I did was the science of virtue signalling, basically centred on a few research papers that I'd read in the psychological literature looking at sort of psychological dimensions that predicted how likely you were to virtue signal, and things like the motivation for doing so. And it's talking about things like how likely you are based on your dark triad scores and things like that. So basically, if you're a malevolent bad person, you're more likely to be a virtue signaler, which I think is pretty common sense. And the next two were obviously Hugo's again, so we took in turns, theories of punishment and also how to punish best. And we're talking about various theories of punishment, and again, this was quite a sort of political academic approach that we took to it. And we had some interesting ideas that I'm not going to spoil. I'm pretty sure the number 14, how to punish best, the thumbnail for that of the Chinese paddling of the arse there, got us in trouble with YouTube, and was one of the few instances where either me or Hugo actually got us in trouble with YouTube. I never thought that would be the thing that would get me in trouble with them, but there we go. And number 15 was, what impact does collectivism have on the individual? And this was looking at psychology relating to collectivist societies and how it changes their behavior to live in a collectivist society. And the funny thing was that one of the main takeaways of it is that collectivist societies actually are more devious and self-serving, just in a veiled way, than individualistic ones. And actually, individualism is better, in my opinion, from my reading of the research. And then we looked at, is too much individualism bad? And can't actually remember what I said about this one, but I can tell you what I think now, that if you see individualism as, you know, being, you know, in, on your own constantly, just being a consumer, being unmoored and unfettered by society, then yes, but actually individualism as a sort of psychological metric is simply how able are you to stand on your own two feet, be it sort of in terms of supporting yourself economically or psychologically. So I actually am far more inclined and sort of to be hyper individualistic in that sense. But I think people conflate what individualism is quite a lot. Sometimes my own colleagues, actually, not naming any names. And this was another one of Hugo's pet topics, number 17, regulation defines society. And he was talking about how deregulation actually helps society in many instances, particularly economically, as well as the follow-up to that, regulation by competition. And he's basically saying, this is how regulation harms society, but here is how society can be regulated, not formally by laws, but by competition between various entities, be they states or be they companies. And of course, he was the one that introduced me to the notion that antitrust laws, which are meant to be, you know, preventing monopolies, actually work to help preserve monopolies, because it's the government inviting in companies that they're favorable towards to deviously write legislation that targets their competitors in the name of anti-monopoly legislation. And I think the following two contemplations are probably the ones that I felt like I dropped the ball on the most. Obviously, I've talked about Buddhism and Taoism a fair amount, but I thought I understood it far more in May of 2021 than I did in 2024. And I think that although I had a very cursory and superficial look, I could have done a much better job in both of those. But if I remember rightly, I had a very limited amount of time. I think I might have been either sick or something like that. And so I actually had to rush them out, which is unfortunate. And it's not something I wanted to do, obviously, but unfortunately, that is the nature of the job we do, that we can't always spend all the time we want to. Otherwise, I'd be spending, you know, a month per video creating something very polished and, you know, flawless. But we simply weren't in a position as a business to be able to do that at that time, which is a shame because it's what I would want to do. It's where my heart was at. But I understood the necessity of creating regular videos because, of course, this was something that was to the benefit of our audience, right? People were paying to support us and we felt like we had to put things out. It is also worth mentioning as well, it started off as a free series, and that was simply because they were, you know, an hour a piece. They were equivalent to, you know, a podcast, you know, as in the live podcast, three segments, but rather than three segments, we had one long segment about something a bit more academic because we both came from academia, me and Hugo. So that was why we took the approach we did. So another one of Hugo's here, The Tale of Two Equalities, and this was talking about the distinction between equality of opportunity and equality of outcome. This is sort of beating a dead horse at this point because everyone's sort of familiar with it. And so at the time, it seemed a bit more novel to make this distinction. It was sort of around the time that Peterson was repeating the difference. I'm not going to do a Peterson impression because I'm already getting a sore throat from doing all this talking, but you get the gist of it, right? You can watch it if you want, but, you know, this is something we talk about quite a lot. And then Hugo posed the notion that is equality a noble goal, in which he said, no one's equal, so stop caring about it, which I wholeheartedly agree with. And I, at that point, was sort of, oh, well, equality of opportunity, though, is good. And although I'm still sympathetic towards that, I think the whole word equality has kind of been poisoned now. I don't want anything to do with it, even though I think that, you know, you should hire the best people for the job. It's just how you define the best, right? So this is one of the ones that was certainly my bread and butter. Why is there a crisis in the human sciences? And this was talking about the replicability crisis. And this was partly motivated by people like Milo Yiannopoulos saying all of the human sciences are rubbish. And I was just like, no, some research is bad, but you're, you know, flippant and just disregarding, you know, you're throwing the baby out with the bathwater. There's no need to tar excellent research that actually proves very tangible things by basically social psychology. You know, you wouldn't disregard, say, neuroscience, where there's neuroimaging studies with physical evidence of what the brain looks like doing certain things, and say that's the same as someone saying rape culture in universities, which was actually a scholarship that I was offered at Harvard, which obviously I turned down because, you know, I don't believe in rape culture. It's a silly concept, which has thankfully died a death. And then we also talked about how to best classify political beliefs. And this was the beginning of my work on looking at things like political compasses and political tests, because psychometric tests were sort of my bread and butter coming from university. And so these sorts of tests were things that I understood quite well. So another one of Hugo's here. This was June of 2021, UN Sustainable Development Goals. We've talked about this on the podcast a fair few times, how the UN is pushing woke nonsense. And, you know, this is fairly cut and dry stuff. And another one here. I think we actually switched to take turns doing one each and making it an hour a weekend between each of us. And my one was the impact of social media on the individual, and it's just looking at research, really, saying how social media influences people's psychology. And yeah, if you've noticed a theme that I was looking at a lot more psychological topics after being fresh off of my master's, you're right, I was. And then another one of mine, what adaptations make human beings exceptional? And this was sort of my foray into biology and sort of evolution and talking about why human beings are the apex predators on Earth and all of these features in which we have, which you may not pay attention to. And I feel like this is one of the ones that actually stands the test of time more so from my early period. And I always enjoy these sort of topics because, you know, I'm known for enjoying my sort of camping and survivalism and hunter-gathering and all that sort of stuff, the prehistory things. And it was nice to be able to do this. It was one of the things that really felt like a passion project rather than stuff relating to politics, which was almost a burden to bear and always has been for me. I care about politics, obviously, and I want things to change, but it's one of those things where there's just this dark cloud over it. It seems unpleasant. I can't fully enjoy it in a way in which things that aren't politicized I can. And Hugo did one on the United Nations and the common agenda for the post-COVID world. This was, of course, in the COVID times. And so it was looking at their schemes and what they get up to, I suppose. And another one of Hugo's here. How bad is the war on drugs? And I think he did a second one as well here again. So he was basically arguing that the war on drugs, if it's targeting recreational non-violent users, is bad. This is my position as well still. Most of the other Lotus Eaters don't agree with that. And I think that, you know, they're basically persecuting people for not harming anyone other than maybe themselves. But it depends on your perspective on things. Obviously, I don't suggest people go out and do heroin. But if it's something like cannabis, I can understand why people might feel comfortable doing that in the comfort of their own home, as opposed to, you know, harder things. Like if you're taking PCP and running out on the railway lines or something, yeah, that's very different to something that, you know, might make a film more enjoyable to watch and you eat a bit too much. And another one of Hugo's is how to tell if we are living in socialism. And Hugo was doing the thing of anything that isn't freedom is socialism. And it's a kind of a bit tongue-in-cheek. But he was arguing that, yes, we kind of live in socialism. And considering 50% of all of the UK's GDP goes through the government, it's difficult to argue that we're not halfway to full-on communism and therefore, you know, socialistic in essence. We also have an NHS in Britain, which is obviously socialist. So it's a pretty easy argument to make. And then I had my first foray into philosophy on the series, methods of cultivating virtues. And I was just talking about how I applied my knowledge of psychology to my own life. And, you know, I'm not saying that, oh, I'm so virtuous and what have you. But there was a sort of hankering in the audience for, well, look at things that relate to virtue. And that was what I did by audience request. And number 32, democratic peace theory, was looking at how democracies don't wage wars against each other. And this is a new sort of paradigm in the modern world, post-war, that democracies kind of stick together and target other political systems and looking at the consequences of that. And then I did one, what are the most effective means of political participation? This, of course, was after the 2020 election and people were a bit disaffected. And so I thought I would talk about different ways of engaging in politics to give people a certain amount of hope for the future. I mean, not sure it's worked, but, you know, I tried. And then Hugo did one on political representation. This was just talking about the myth of how electing a representative, they actually represent your interests. And I very much agree with this, that, you know, a representative can't represent the interests of their constituents because their constituents may have conflicting interests and therefore they're going to pick sides and therefore not really be a representative in the true sense of the word. And it's basically a shot fired at democracy itself. You know, I can certainly see the limitations of representative democracy, and you know, it plays into the Churchill quote of democracy is, you know, one of the best of a bad. I'm really butchering the quote, but you know, he said it's the best of a bad bunch, right? That's the gist of the quote. I'm not a fan of Churchill, so I don't care about quoting his words correctly. And then I did one, how to rig an election, basically talking about all the different ways that you can, believe it or not, rig an election. And I'm not suggesting you do that, but it's just, you know, it was topical in 2021 after a certain event in 2020, at the end of 2020. And Hugo did one on the border debate about open and closed borders. We're just discussing various perspectives on borders, you know, run-of-the-mill political science stuff again. And then I went into some psychology here. Also worth mentioning as well, John had stopped editing. We'd hired Michael as an editor, and he was editing all of the contemplations from this point, and John was sticking to the production side of things. And yes, I was looking at conformity, which is sort of bread and butter. It's sort of early stuff that you learn in psychology, but it's also very important to learn about for politics, because of course there's plenty of that in modern politics. And then Hugo posed the question, are there human rights? And what are they and what are they not? And he was talking about various ideas on human rights. I'm very skeptical on the idea personally, because, you know, it's basically a laundry list of things you want. And, you know, the reality of the situation is that you get what you can make for yourself. Although I'm sympathetic, obviously, to, you know, having a constitution that limits power of the state. I'm a libertarian, so, you know, surprise, surprise, I like things like the Second Amendment and the First Amendment in the United States that say, you know, you have the right to this. The government cannot infringe these rights. I much prefer the negative liberty approach of saying the government should not do this, because it's better than framing it as if the government is the one that grants you rights. As I think, actually, the limit should be placed on the government. It shouldn't be saying you have the right to, because our, you know, it's up to the government to justify why they have a right to interfere in our lives, not the other way around. Then I looked at what is intelligence, and this is something where I looked at different theories of intelligence, sort of IQ tests, EQ tests, testing emotion and things like that. And then I think the final one that Hugo did was the tragedy of schooling, and this was something that he was very passionate about. So if you were to watch any of Hugo's contemplations, I think this was the one that he would most be keen to look at. And he saw schooling as a form of indoctrination, and the fact that the state is involved in education, sort of evidence that they have a vested interest in brainwashing people and forcing them to conform and things like that. And he looked at lots of different models of education as well as homeschooling, and he thought that they were better than having a state school, which I agree with. I, you know, I support school choice and the right to homeschool children and all that sort of stuff. I think that if you force people in to be educated by the state, it's a slippery slope to, you know, the Soviet Union. And then Rory, our written article editor, makes his first appearance on, is music really becoming worse? And I was talking to Rory because he had a degree in music production, or despite being a fantastic writer. You know, it's funny that he was originally going to go into music, but his talents as a writer would have been completely spoilt. Although, of course, I'm not saying that he wasn't a talented musician either. But this was a very uplifting conversation, because we're basically saying that music hasn't got worse. It's just that the industry has been pushing lowbrow stuff to people who don't really like music. They've been, you know, pushing the envelope to people who wouldn't have otherwise gone out in the past, when music was a bit more elitist, to spend their money on records, say. And, you know, it's never been a better time to find music, because it's all online. You don't have to dig through all the vinyl records in a shop and find obscure stuff. And, you know, it's all on your phone. You've got all of these things available to you, and it's actually great. And I still stand by that wholeheartedly, that yeah, it's a fantastic time to love music. It's never been better. And It's a nice uplifting thing. And here's also Bo's first appearance on Contemplations. This is around the time he started, I think, in 2021. And it was Diogenes the Dog's Perfect Society. This was a recommendation from the audience. Just what would it look like if Diogenes, the ancient Greek philosopher who lived in a jar and was referred to like a dog, renowned for flexing on Alexander the Great and throwing a plucked chicken at Plato. You know, it was a bit of fun. It was my first attempt at actually making the series a bit of a laugh, although Bo kind of hated Diogenes. I thought he was a sort of irreverent figure that was doing things to prove a point to people. And Bo didn't see it like that. He saw him as just a degenerate. And yeah, didn't necessarily turn out the way I wanted it to, but it was good fun. Also, Carl finally deigned to appear on my show, talking about the science of dadism, where I was basically looking at the importance of fatherhood in children's lives and some of the developmental psychology that I covered my time at university. And then Thomas's debut was on Halloween, where I was looking at ghosts and telling the future. I know a very stern philosophical mind may not necessarily have been the first person you would have imagined to have a sort of jovial, spooky thing, but I really enjoyed it. And it was a bit of silliness for Halloween that I hope was good fun. And also, we have Harry's debut. We hired lots of presenters around this time to take some of the pressure off of Carl and Callum on the podcast mainly. Harry appeared, and one of the things that he was keen to talk to me about was how can bad people become popular and liked. And I looked at people like Ted Bundy and criminality and these sort of personality traits of psychopaths, how they can be superficially charming despite being bad people. And of course, there are lots of things that I've covered in Contemplations that have followed on from this. And next one with Thomas again, looking at philosophical idealism. This was quite a heavy philosophy topic. And this was very much his bread and butter, the things that he was working on his doctorate. Looking at things like German idealism and the various views on it. And yes, I don't pretend to be an expert on it. I did rely heavily on Thomas for that one to explain these sorts of things to me. But I think it was quite an intellectually stimulating conversation, if you can follow it. And here we have the first S show. I'm not going to swear, of course, but my debate with Carl about whether free will is an illusion or not. And it basically amounted to we agreed on most things and then talked past each other. I tried to explain that, you know, Carl saying I have choices isn't counter to my view, and it was quite frustrating, in all honesty. Lots of people commented on it, though. It was one of the most commented on videos, probably various people screeching at one another and each other, mainly me, actually, because, of course, the argument that the brain, you know, is a physical thing, it's the thing that is responsible for your thoughts and behaviours, and it has material conditions which can be predicted, and therefore if you can predict the way in which people behave, then there is causality and therefore it's determined by stuff. It's actually quite an uncontroversial argument, but it got bogged down in, you know, sophistic philosophy. And then I did one on tribalism and group preference with Bo, and this is Bo sort of picking my brain about psychology, which he's done quite a few occasions here. And I was talking about just human nature, really, and that's what's in the thumbnail, that we're tribal by nature is what's allowed us to survive. And so perhaps trying to defeat tribalism when it's hard-coded into our very nature is a failing thing. It's better to figure out ways in which we can reduce group conflict rather than trying to create this multicultural society where everyone is accepted everywhere. It's, you know, a pipe dream. It's not going to happen because human nature isn't like that. So this next one, number 49, was one of the times where I managed to coax Callum into appearing on my show. And this was Callum's suggestion. He wanted to look at the parliamentary system, the Westminster parliamentary system. And this is something that I actually knew a fair amount about from my study of politics before. So I looked at political systems and things like that. And yes, it was probably a little bit dry. There was lots on constitutions and the nature of how the system works. But it's also very important for following British politics, as well as the fact that the parliamentary system, you know, was the basis for a lot of other political systems around the world. And then we have the emergence of John Wheatley, who is certainly a fan favourite. And of course, being the Korea and weeaboo that he is, we covered the culture and politics of South Korea. And it was basically John Wheatley explaining things to me, as well as me presenting various things that I found out as well. And, you know, it's always fun to present with John, as well as many of my other co-presenters as well, of course. But, you know, we had a good chemistry, and it was nice to learn about South Korea from someone who actually lived and worked there and spoke the language and had a Western perspective on things. You know, it's a rare thing to come across people like that. And so it was a fun one. And then the next one here, 51, I was talking about altruism and selfishness with Bo, and I was looking at the psychological research here. And I was basically arguing that altruism, as it sort of as a concept, becomes a bit wishy-washy. It's sort of a word to represent things that are less self-interested. But if you look at things like true altruism, where you give away all of your possessions and your money and your worldly things, well, you're not being kind to yourself. And so there's a limit. Self-interest still relates to altruism in a certain sense, but it's sort of, we say if you're engaging in mutual self-interest that it's more altruistic than pure self-interest, I suppose. And it's sort of weighing up these two concepts. And the next one was the culture and politics of Russia, which I believe I did with Bo. And this was talking about, believe it or not, the culture and politics of Russia. We also presaged the invasion of Ukraine before it happened, I think. I can't remember. I don't even remember when that started. It was so long ago now. But yes, we're mainly talking about Russian history and things like that. It was a good excuse, really, to flex my knowledge of Russian history. Although I'm not quite on the level of Putin with that two-hour interview with Tucker Carlson quite yet. And then I had a discussion with Thomas, 453, about the philosophical direction of the West, where we're talking about the way philosophy would go in the future, particularly touching on nihilism, morality, and as well as postmodernism. And then the one following that was talking more about Russia, particularly the culture and politics rather than the history, in the second part. And then another one with John Wheatley, why the corporate media is terrible. And I was talking about the various ways in which the mainstream media does bad things and sort of categorizing them in easy to recognize groups, so you can spot these sort of misgivings of the media and, you know, the many reasons why I joined here in the first place. Then I did another one with Bo for 56, looking at social hierarchy and looking at historic examples as well as psychology. And it's another one of those ones where, you know, the history and the psychology come to meet together, and this blend, you know, you don't often get in academia. You don't get these sort of cross pollinations between topics, but that's one of the joys of working at Lotus Eaters, is you get lots of people with various expertises that can have conversations about stuff and come at it from different perspectives, which is always good fun in my mind. And yes, we did the culture and politics of Scotland. That was me and John Wheatley for 57. Half my family are Scottish, and John Wheatley lived in Scotland, so we had a fair amount of first-hand knowledge. I have also been to Scotland, although I grew up in Devonshire in southern England, basically the opposite end of the UK. So I don't claim to be Scottish. You know, I don't do that thing that Joe Biden does where I'm just like, I'm Irish. I don't say I'm Scottish. No, I'm English. Listen to me. Do I sound Scottish? No, I'm not. And here, this was when Harry was still a libertarian, when he was a good guy. No, I'm joking, obviously. Harry, if you're watching, you're still a good guy. Why monopolies ruin everything. And I was basically talking about the economic theories about how political monopolies, well, they're not great either, but corporate monopolies make economies worse, and how they come about and how governments assist them. As well as following that, what makes a good leader? And I was talking about leadership with Beau. I was looking at the psychology. Beau was looking at historic examples. And again, another melding of psychology and history. Can you see a running theme in my topic choice? I think so. And then this next one for number 60 was John Wheatley's idea, the value of nostalgia. And I looked at some of the research in psychology, as well as just talking about my own personal experiences, because of course, you know, they're relevant in psychology. I am a human being, funnily enough. And the irony of talking about nostalgia whilst going through nostalgically looking at my own work is not lost on me either. And the next one was with Thomas, the philosophy of objectivism. This was me teaching Thomas something, talking about Ayn Rand's philosophy of rational individualism. I'm not a Randian, even though some libertarians are. And this is one of those ones where it was quite academic, I suppose. And then me and John Wheatley did a country profile on Ukraine in March of 2022. I'm pretty sure the invasion had happened by then. And I think that he'd already started documenting the day-by-day movements in Ukraine. Sorry, I'm getting hiccups. Oh dear. And so he was sort of very hot on the Ukraine stuff. I was a bit lukewarm on it, but I was happy to talk about it just to have a look, because it was interesting to me. And another one here with John Wheatley is how government controls your behavior. This is looking at nudge theory in particular. And because I specialized in behavioral decision making, I was sort of an expert on the studies that inform this understanding of how to manipulate people. And so that's one of my better ones, I think. And Harry posed the question to me about why did Venezuela collapse? And so I explained how Venezuela went from one of the richest countries in South America into the poorest, based on their economic policies. And that's another one I'm quite proud of, because it was very informative. And I think I saw a comment from a Venezuelan saying that I got it right. So that was particularly nice. And this next one is one of the more viewed contemplations episodes, the one on prepping. And I did this with John Wheatley, where he was basically a foil to me talking about my enthusiasm for camping. I did get one or two negative comments, just like, these guys don't know what they're talking about. But it was an introduction. You know, it's a short video. Also, I'm not going to Fed post either. The people saying, hey, you've only talked about the stuff you can do legally. It's like, yeah, of course I am, you idiot. But no, it was mostly very highly esteemed, actually. And it was good fun. You know, I brought in a bunch of stuff from my camping supplies and things like that, and basically gave out the basics, presumed that people didn't know anything about anything, just to make sure that, you know, those 8,000 people that watched it, if it comes to a survival situation, they'll be okay now. So, you know, you're welcome. Who says I don't do anything for you? And next one was with Thomas, looking at aesthetics and philosophy of things like beauty, and very important, particularly for conservatism, and looking at urban decay, as well as looking at postmodernism. And this was our first attack on Peterson and Lindsay, who we inherited his views from, basically saying that they misrepresent what postmodernism is and provide it too much agency. And, you know, we went to the primary sources and said, look, this is what they say. You can't have postmodern neo-Marxism, because postmodernism is against grand narratives. Marxism has a grand narrative that's, historic materialism or whatever it is, where, you know, this sweep towards socialism throughout history, that is a grand narrative. The two are incompatible. You can have postmodern socialism, maybe, or communism, but you can't have Marxism, because I think it's dialectical materialism. is baked into Marxism. It's one of the central points of it. And so it doesn't make sense as a concept to have postmodern neo-Marxism or what have you. Now, me and John Wheatley in number 68 had a whinge about American cultural influence in Britain and how America being the dominant country has had an effect on our culture, even though, you know, American culture was defined by British culture originally. And it was just us talking about how the British way is being eroded. We didn't blame America, by, you know, Americans themselves. It was more that it's an unfortunate circumstance that our culture was being slowly eroded. And, you know, still to this day, if someone says take out rather than take away, couch instead of sofa, and any number of things that have slipped into popular consciousness in Britain, it kind of makes me annoyed. I never fail to correct people who say it because, you know, defense of proper British language is great. And, you know, have no problem if you're American and you use those words, that's fine. You don't have to follow in my footsteps. You've got your own distinct language now, that's fine. But in Britain, it should be British, obviously. So another appearance of Carl, we were looking at physiognomy and what you can tell from a person's appearance. And this actually comes from work I did at university where it sort of vindicated physiognomy in a way that you can tell stuff from how people look because, you know, your genes are expressed in your face, your genes determine your behavior, and you have genes in common that affect your physical appearance and your psychological behavior. So actually it makes sense that there's a relationship between how people look and how they act and behave, which is controversial, to say the least. Then John Wheatley talked to me about the culture and politics of Imperial Japan, which I found good fun. I didn't know anything other than they captured my grandfather in World War II and tortured him and he had to escape. So yeah, not a big fan of the Japs in that period of history, but you know, that is very interesting at the same time. Then in 71, I taught Thomas about existentialism because it's one of the areas of philosophy that I'd actually read a fair amount about and Thomas hadn't. And I was quite pleased about this one because I did a ton of reading for it and I felt like I did it justice. And then me and Harry looked at the social credit system in China and sort of presaged it coming in. I've since sort of refined my view on it after doing a bit more reading and research. And so my contemplations on how dystopian is China is probably a better overview of the social credit system, if a bit more so sort of superficial than this full contemplations. And then I looked at what is wrong with Western philosophy with Thomas again on number 73, and basically saying that there are lots of aspects of philosophy that have had detrimental effects on society and that philosophy isn't, you know, always positive for the world and that some ideas are bad for the world, which is pretty uncontroversial in my opinion. And then Harry asked me about the biology of why sex is binary, and so I did a whole contemplations on it, explaining it to him, and you know, it was good stuff. I think I might have made a few slips of the tongue here and there, but I got the gist of it. And you know, the actual arguments to argue with trannies online, you know, that's all there and that's all solid, and that's the main reason for it, really. That's a motivation for looking at it, because otherwise who would care? And then I did a three-part series with Bo looking at what makes good art, and we went from all the way from modern art backwards to classical art and some of the earliest art, basically from postmodern art to cave paintings. We have you covered, and I meticulously went through and looked at all the key works of art over the period. And so if you're sort of interested in learning about art and what the key works of art are, this is actually a good port of call. And it was actually a really fun conversation to have, because I enjoyed sort of posing these pictures to Bo and trying to figure out whether he would like them or not. And spoiler alert, he doesn't like some of the more modern stuff. Who'd have thought that a historian would feel that way? Then I talked to John about the wisdom of wabi-sabi, which is, of course, a Japanese aesthetic philosophy. And another one with Wheatley, the politics of Australia. He loved the politics of series. And this was quite an easy one because we got forwarded lots of information from Australians. So if you did that, thank you. And then we looked at globalism. We sort of did a bit of myth busting about what the globalists would want. And that was with Wheatley again. And then I did one with Harry, another one on China, because I think he was interested in China at this period of time. And I was looking at the Chinese economy and the restructuring that they have to go through. And it's still not solved a lot of the problems that I described here. And I'm very proud of this one, actually. I did a lot of research and I feel like I did a lot of good work in this contemplations. And then Connor's first appearance, who should be purged from the right? So this was a very controversial entry. We ruffled some feathers from the get-go. Although I think a lot of you would probably agree, like it was people like the wet conservatives, you know, the conservative cuck types, as well as sort of the weird sex pest people and sort of creepy pickup artists and things like that, where, you know, they're sort of associated with right-wing spheres, but they make us look bad or grant victories to our enemies or get us in foreign wars. And then one of my favourite contemplations, although I think I might have had some mild brain damage when presenting it because I was umming and erring excessively there, was the one I did with Bo about our amazing space exploration progress. And this was looking at the James Webb Space Telescope, which the images from it are absolutely amazing. It's, you know, one of the best things to ever happen in my lifetime in terms of human progress. And I feel very privileged to have been able to not only talk about it, but just to see it. You know, it's amazing to see space. It's amazing to see the universe and the world we live in. And it's words can't really explain the wonder and awe and mystery that you get out of looking at these images. So I would very much advise you to watch it, even though, you know, you've got to tolerate my stop and start presentation style. So another controversial one, again with Connor, was the Manosphere's disastrous dating advice. And we're basically saying, don't rote learn how to be a man from someone on the internet. Just focus on being a better person. And as long as you focus on being good, good things will come. And you know, go out, talk to people, do things, have hobbies, meet people in the world. And I think we were somewhat skeptical of things like dating apps and things like that. But they do work for people sometimes. You've just got to know how to use them, right? It's similar to most technology these days that when it's new, people don't know how to use it responsibly, and eventually some sort of etiquette around it forms. So I did quite a sympathetic look at transspeciesism, which is one of the sort of dysphorias that you look at less in the world. And this was with Harry, and we looked at some case studies as well as some research, as well as forum posts from the people who have it, trying to understand it and the nature of the thing. And sort of be a bit more understanding, because it veers into the territory of, you know, it's difficult to make fun of people that are that far away from what is the norm, I suppose. And then I had a very civil debate with Connor about the morality of abortion, although I still take quite a conservative position relative to, you know, most of the Western world. Connor was very much taking a harder line approach, which probably more of the audience agree with, to be honest. But, you know, as I said towards the start of the video, I'm not one to pander to what I think the audience will want to hear. And, you know, hopefully that's part of the reason why you watch my videos in the first place, is that you know I'm at least being honest, because sometimes I say things that aren't going to make me popular, and I'm well aware of that. But hey, that's part of, you know, being an honest person is sometimes hanging yourself out to dry willingly. And then by the Carl's suggestion, we looked at Nietzsche's ascetic priests. I've made that mistake a few times in the recording. I still don't understand what they are. Carl basically explained it to me, and it was a load of philosophical rubbish, in my view. I'm sure there's probably some wisdom in there. It was all over my head, to be honest. It was so abstract to the point of, you know, I couldn't understand it. And, you know, I'm an empirical scientist. I like observations, I like data. When it gets to abstraction to the point of, you know, I have no frame of reference, I get a bit lost. And maybe you'll find the same, maybe you won't. So you'll have to give that one a watch and tell me. And this was a fun one that I did with Bo. It's basically, Bo had lots of questions about psychology, and I basically did a roundup video of just weird stuff that Bo was interested in. And it's basically me explaining stuff to Bo, but in a video. And I actually found it good fun, and I think it turned out quite good as well. And then I did another one with Harry where we looked at journalists using rhetorical tricks. This is 89. And this is basically how they try and lie and smear and manipulate narratives and things like that, and how to spot it, which very useful thing to watch, actually. I think I formalized a lot of these understandings from reading so much media. You have no idea how many horrendous articles I've read over the years. Yep, these eye bags, they came from somewhere. Then I had another one with Harry about talking about what do the elite actually want. And this is another very important one. I sort of had a very good streak through here of doing very meaningful episodes of contemplations about politics in particular. And then I veered into psychology again. I talked about human consciousness with Bo because he was asking me lots of questions about it. And it's an area, I mean, my undergraduate dissertation was looking at unconscious decision making. So consciousness is naturally something that interests me, and it should interest everyone because it's one of the great unanswered questions about what is consciousness in human psychology. And another one with Connor, this one less controversial, why women love serial killers. And Connor actually had a lot to add here, which was great. He likes his sort of true crime stuff. And it was good fun. And I learned a bit, Connor learned a bit, and hopefully the audience learned a bit as well as it being just good fun and interesting. And another one with Harry when he was still a libertarian, I'm not bitter or anything. Is protectionism better than free trade? And my argument was kind of like, only in wartime or with your political enemies it is, but you know, with your allies, free trade is normally quite good unless it's matters of national security. So you kind of want to produce enough food in your own country so that if you get blockaded you can live. Otherwise if you get blockaded, the Americans can swoop in and break up your empire, which definitely didn't happen to Britain in World War II and World War I, and they definitely didn't rely on our desperate situation to become the you know, the dominant country in the world. The State Department, I might add. It's not regular Americans. I'm not bitter. And no flow from that topic to the next one, how America became the most powerful country in the world, but that was too long a title. I did that one with Bo, and we're talking about the transition from America being, you know, a successful country to the most successful in that period of history, and how it happened, how Britain was knocked off the top after the two world wars. Yes, our country got destroyed is the long and short of it, as in Britain, and America didn't. And that's, you know, and also America's the equivalent of a continent, right? So you've got so much land for development, it just took time. And, you know, it's more fair to compare Europe to North America than it is, you know, a country to North America, because it's a massive country, beautiful country, and you know, the one country in the world I would choose to live if I didn't live in Britain. So I'm not being mean, right? And this was a question that Harry came to me with: is the left really more creative? And this was one where I had to pull out some of my psychology about the nature of human creativity, and it's the long and short of it is that creativity manifests in lots of different ways, but sometimes the left is a bit more factional, and therefore with something like art, where it's who you know, that rather than your objective talents, it's not necessarily meritocratic, the left can be favored, as well as if it's sort of pompous BS, you know, you're better at lying about something, whereas the right cares a bit more about, you know, objective reality and merit and talent. So I did another Halloween special. I think I dressed up for this one as a vampire sort of looking thing, although it was also similar to Brain Guy as well. This one was with Harry, and I was just coming up with spooky stories and things to creep people out and freak them out. And it was good fun. I very much recommend watching it, even if it's not Halloween. And one of the more controversial thumbnails on Contemplations was the conversation I had with Connor, where we talked about the psychology and morality of pornography. Also quite well viewed. And, you know, me and Connor more or less agreed on a lot of this stuff, I think. Although I think the only point of sort of digression was that I didn't think things should be banned. And he did, if I remember rightly. It was a long time ago. So I think two of my most favourite contemplations I ever did were these next two with Beau. On the origin of humanity, where I was looking at paleoanthropology and, you know, what humanity was like, you know, our distant ancestors all the way up until we were sort of anatomically modern humans, as well as tackling the out of Africa hypothesis and looking at some of the archaeology and paleontology, I suppose. I don't know whether when that begins and paleoanthropology ends, but whatever. These are great. This was a real passion project for me. And I put in an absolute ton of research into it. And I went through pretty much all of the extant evidence for it. And it's probably one of the ones that I've been the most thorough. So for number 100, I did A Brief History of the Lotus Eaters in November of 2022. You know, it had been around for, 2 years at that point, almost exactly. And it also coincided with episode 100 of Contemplations, coincidentally, and so I just reminisced with Carl. A good point to look at a window of time in Lotus Eater's history, if you're interested. And I did another one with Harry, looking at how research and studies basically prove that leftists are bad people, which was actually quite good fun. I was a bit more pejorative in the title and thumbnail than I was in the actual video, but still, I still think they're bad people. And then I did one with Connor, Are We a Civilization of Drug Addicts, where we looked at, you know, how dependent Western civilization is on prescription drugs and, you know, actual drugs, be it alcohol or, you know, antidepressants. And, you know, arguing that, yeah, our civilization seems to be built on drug taking. And although, you know, it's very taboo to take the illegal ones, the legal ones seem to be, you know, destructive as well. And they get a sort of slap on the wrist, whereas actually, you know, most opiate addicts become opiate addicts because of prescriptions. So that's worth mentioning for a start. Then I addressed another question from Harry, how accurate are stereotypes? Where I basically said, well, actually, stereotypes are just an informal way of data collection processed in the unconscious mind, and actually they tend to be true. You know, anyone who's encountered gypsies knows that if you leave your bicycle outside, it'll be gone. The stereotype exists for a reason. Then I did one with Beau about Christmas traditions. And this was, of course, for Christmas. It came out on Christmas Eve. Very wholesome, talking about tradition, family, Christmas time, and the meaning behind all of those things. And obviously, that was a nice thing to go out. Speaking of which, I spoke with Carl about the importance of family, which was a nice, nourishing episode of Contemplations where, you know, we talk about the role of families and, you know, the father role, the mother role, and the importance they have on children. Some of my more developmental psychology stuff. And then I did an episode with Connor about the best innovations of 2022. I was basically going through and trying to provide an antidote to the cynicism I was feeling at the time. I was a bit miserable about the state of the world. I mean, it was end of 2022. It was all looking pretty grim, actually. And, there weren't, you know, I tried to remain positive because I think also with news, you tend to focus on the negative things and there's a lot more to life than politics and, you know, the direction of society. And what I always say to remind people is that no matter what the government is, a walk in the countryside is still just as beautiful, whatever the political system is. You know, there are some things that the government really can't take away from you. And that's comforting to my mind, that, you know, there are things that you can savour, that you don't have to be cynical. And that was the sort of philosophy I had in mind. And here we have the first appearance of Stelios in a conversation about morality. And we were just talking about different perspectives on morality, which was good fun. You know, me and Stelios work together quite a lot on things, you know, psychologist and a philosopher together. Makes sense that we've got quite compatible niches. And then another two ones that I really enjoyed presenting was the ones on Celtic mythology with Bo. I first looked at the religion and the philosophy within Celtic religions, sort of Brittonic particularly, but also sort of Irish and Gaulish, or what would be called French, and also looking at the gods themselves and how they're depicted and some of the archaeology figuring them out, because of course some of them are lost to history. And then I spoke to Harry about libertarianism. This is around the time that Harry deviated from libertarianism and became a traitor. Nah, it's all right. No hard feelings. And we were addressing some of the criticisms of libertarianism. I kind of emphasized the fact that I'm not a typical libertarian, which should be apparent from all of my presenting over the years. You know, I don't want open borders. I don't want to diddle kids. So goes without saying. But we're talking about how, you know, there are some aspects of it which plenty of people on the right agree with. There are other aspects of it where, you know, you get the people saying, you know, the age of consent is a government oppression and stuff like that. And they're the people that aren't really libertarians. They're just paedophiles and should be driven out of society with pitchforks and preferably onto a great pyre of burning flame. And another one with Connor here, how to spot a liar. And this is just looking at research in how to spot people lying. I mean, it's fairly self-explanatory, really. And here's one with Stelios on the Tao Te Ching, which is a Taoist thing. And I did Taoism justice here by actually reading from the primary text and interpreting them. And we both came at it with, I sort of brought what was the Eastern understanding in Stelios with his sort of Western philosophy background. Talked about how profound they were, as well as how they're compatible with sort of ancient Western philosophy as well, particularly ancient Greek philosophy. And I felt like that was a really good one, fun one. It's a nice one to listen to in the background and to relax you. So, you know, get a nice cup of good tea and chill out and listen to some ancient Chinese wisdom. And then this one was me placating Carl because, you know, he hates science for some reason. And I was talking about the limitations of the scientific perspective and talking about how it's actually not the scientific method that's the problem, but the scientists themselves. You know, the scientific method is that you need evidence for something, which I think is the standard that everyone judges everything. And it's pretty uncontroversial. It's not necessarily the method, but people deviating from it or lying about it for their own gain that causes a lot of the problems, or just poor methodology more generally. And then Bo had a question about what are dreams. And this is basically another one of those ones where Bo wanted to know about psychology. And I, you know, explained it to him and it was good fun. And it's quite nice and lighthearted and wholesome. And I did one with Harry about how corporations exploit ordinary people. This is a sort of antidote to the notion that I'm some sort of corporate suck-up because I'm a libertarian. I was also very bitter because I had an ongoing dispute with my energy company. So I suppose I should say this is for you, OVO Energy. Yeah, they suck. And they ripped me off, basically, for a problem that was entirely theirs. And I had another debate with Connor about euthanasia. I argued that if people have like debilitating, crippling illnesses that there's no chance of recovery, that cause them great pain, that it should be okay to euthanize them if they have an ability to consent themselves, or if someone has a condition that develops while they're still cognizant, they can write down the conditions in which they wish to be euthanized. That was my thing, whereas Connor was arguing from the sort of religious point of view of the sanctity of human life. But yes, as you can tell, I'm a heartless pragmatist and I'm basically evil. Here's one I have with Harry. Again, are video games bad for you? Spoiler alert, I love video games. I think they're great. And I've actually gone to great lengths here to document all the ways in which they're good for you, with facts and logic as well. Lots of research on it, because the psychological literature is actually replete with looks at video games. So if you hear boomers saying, hey, video games are bad for you, do something else with your free time, like you should work until you're dead, tell them to shut up, and that actually it helps you foster lots of different cognitive abilities. And if you approach it with the frame of mind of, well, I play video games rather than watch the brain rot that is TV as a form of entertainment, it's fine. You know, if you have other things to do in your life, if you know you don't have a job, maybe playing video games isn't good for you, but that's obvious. You know, only an idiot needs that explaining to them. And so the people who say video games are bad are idiots. That's my position. So another fun one that was looking at sort of paleoanthropology, another passion project of mine, is looking at the self-domestication hypothesis that through becoming agricultural societies and building towns and cities because of agriculture, that we unintentionally domesticated ourselves, because the human skull actually has lots of features of self-domestication that you see in man-domesticated animals. It changes the genetics because it makes them more sort of pro-social and less aggressive. And, you know, people with aggressive facial features were weeded out and slowly killed throughout history. And that actually the people that are left are those more compatible with civilization. Of course, they have to come from either Asia, the Middle East, or Europe. I suppose North America, because they traveled from Asia and South America as well. But they were, you know, people who actually built towns and cities and therefore underwent the self-domestication hypothesis, whereas people in Africa did not, and therefore they do not have the same features that the rest of the world have, as well as they don't have the same disposition towards civilization that, say, Europeans and Asians and, by extension, the Americas do. And then I had a discussion with Carl about UFOs, whether they're possible, and then also the following one, UFOs, going through the sightings, and it was basically me trying to pin Carl down, just like, yeah, the UFO thing is actually serious. Look at all these people saying that, you know, they've seen them. All of these authorities that have been harmed in their careers, you know, what reason do they have to say these sorts of things? Why are they saying it? And, you know, I still have some doubts. It's possible that it's a secret technology we don't know about, but I think that there's a reasonable amount of suspicion that they could be real, to my mind. And obviously these are very fun, but also very important, because of course, you know, the notion of planet Earth being the only place where life is kind of scary to me, in a way that we live in this vast empty universe. I want there to be life everywhere. I want, you know, life to be common, not incredibly rare. I also want that life not to kill us. It is worth mentioning. And then this is one of my novel ideas that I presented, I think, with Stelios, although I talked about it with Connor a fair amount. Are cities the problem? Where I basically argue that urban density and sort of, how do I put it? Just the environment of a city is not conducive to pro-social behaviour. And that actually in rural areas you get far more wholesome behaviour than you might in a city, and that they incentivise bad behaviour, and that part of our urban decay is that we're increasingly urbanised. And related to that is the conversation I had with Connor about the Mouse Utopia experiment, which looked at overpopulation and population density in mice to look at the common mechanisms in which they have in their brains to human beings. And there was all sorts of chaos that parallels modern society. So these two go together quite nicely and are also both some of my best work, I think. So make sure to check those out. Then my first direct-to-camera video was Why IQ is Not a Good Measure of Intelligence. This is me basically caning IQ, Edward Dutton rip. Yeah, I think it's imperfect. I think that people buy into it too much, and that there's a larger, more holistic perspective of what intelligence is rather than the narrow mathematical abilities or verbal linguistic abilities that it tests. That actually, to be an intelligent human being, there's lots more to it than simply being good at words and being good at numbers and patterns. There's loads of stuff. You know, it's a very broad thing. There are lots of human abilities that psychology has been studying for quite some time. So IQ is useful, but IQ is useful in so much as it correlates with other things, but not perfectly. And that's, of course, because people who are good at things tend to be better at other things more generally, and IQ measures one of the things. So is it a good test of intelligence? Well, watch that and you'll find out. Then me and Stelios had a rather condescendingly titled contemplation. It's called How to Think Better, but we're basically talking about metacognition, ways of thinking about thinking that will help your thinking. Confusing, I know, but psychology has a lot to offer on this, as well as philosophy, and so it was a sort of coming together of ideas that were quite helpful. And then I had a struggle session with Dan where he was caning me for being a libertarian, and I sort of framed it as, is freedom even possible? Dan says no, I say yes. But it's a good one where you get to see where the legislator's perspectives differ, I suppose. And another one of my favourites here with Bo, Victorian Manners and Etiquette, where we were talking about, believe it or not, Victorian Manners and Etiquette. And I was basically saying that we need them back. They're great. As well as we talked about Victorian values as well, and monarchy and politics, and how Victorian attitudes were very different to our own, both in terms of art and science, as well as monarchy and politics, and trying to figure out where we went wrong, I suppose, because I feel like the cultural high watermark in Britain, at least, was in the late 19th century, that we were at our best at that point, which quintessentially is encapsulated in the fact that our empire was biggest. It's funny that, isn't it? Then I talked to Stelios about order and chaos, sort of looking at mythological notions of it, and Peterson, Jung, Joseph Campbell, as well as my notion that it's all order because we live in a material universe. And then we had our first recording in this studio, a big panel on what makes music good. And this was me, Stelios, Rory, and Harry, all musically minded people, all play guitar, coincidentally. But that was good fun. We got to use the video wall and have a really wholesome chat. We also had to re-record it as well because the original recording messed up. Thanks, John. It's definitely one to watch. Very wholesome as well. Then I had a conversation with Connor about when does something become a vice, where we sort of not only talked about the psychology of it and sort of just what contributes to human well-being, but we also talked about ourselves. And it was a moment where we're sort of sharing things that we might not necessarily be entirely comfortable sharing, but for the benefit of you guys, right? And I think it was one of those ones which is quite nourishing, I think. And then I had a discussion with Harry about Carl Schmitt's friend-enemy distinction and how to apply it and understand it. Fairly self-explanatory. Then I discussed with Bo, does geography determine the success of a country? To which we say no. It helps, but not necessarily. You can succeed anywhere if you have enough ingenuity, I think. Look at the Inuit. You know, if you put some Bantu people in the Arctic, would they survive? Well, that's for you to decide. Then we had another sort of panel with Connor and Rory talking about right-wing environmentalism, not rejecting sort of the environment outright and saying everything needs to be concreted over and turned into a factory. But yeah, we actually should care about the outside world, and it's our sort of obligation to take care of the world, because it is passed on to those who come after us, and it's been given to us by those who come before. And if you consider yourself conservative, then, you know, that's kind of the whole point. You know, conservation, conserve, you know, it's in the name. Then I did with Stelios, who of course is Greek, understanding Europe. And between us, I think we covered lots of European countries by first-hand experience, as well as going through lots of maps and data on how various countries fare. And it was a lot of fun. I got to make fun of lots of other countries whilst proclaiming Britain the best. And thus began our series on cults. I did, this was with Bo and Stelios. I did one on cargo cults, one on the Osho cult, one on which they took down our clip from that video, by the way, on YouTube within hours of it going up. They copyright claimed it, even though there was a short clip of it at the start. Talked about Scientology. I was not sued, as well as cult psychology. And spoiler alert, all of the cult psychology experts were Jewish people trying to target Christianity. It was kind of a bit weird that every single one of them were, and yeah, it's not wholesome. They themselves behaved very culty, and the hypocrisy of it, and the fact that they were responsible for getting people either persecuted by the state or even killed in some cases, or abused by themselves, is shocking, actually shocking. And these people were people in authority, respected academics, but no, they were hacks and charlatans. And you know, at least they finally got their comeuppance when they were disgraced, I suppose. Then me, Dan and Connor talked about the economics of organized crime, and talked about how in some ways having more organized crime is better because you have less violence on the streets, although, you know, there are other social consequences to it as well. Obviously, the best thing is not to have any crime. And then I did a sort of two-part series on the origins of the English language. And I ended up having to learn a lot of old and middle English. And it was very difficult. It required a lot of research. And as you can see from the view count, it started off with lots of people being interested and it dropped off. So a lot of hard work for basically nothing. Not nothing, of course. But yes, I felt like it was important because, you know, etymology, understanding the nature of the language that I speak to you with, is very important. And so understanding the way in which English has formed, I think better helps me preserve the way it is. And that was my main motivation for doing it. Then me and Stelios did a thing on right-wing wokeism, talking about all the bad aspects of the right and how we mirror the woke left in some ways sometimes, and how we shouldn't do that because that's compromising our principles and isn't going to help us in the end. We also talked about the paradox of tolerance and Popper and how it's misrepresented by the left, and actually what Popper was saying is actually that people who are intolerant of other people's beliefs should be purged, which is the left. So it's actually kind of based. And thus begun the liberalism debate, this struggle session, which I don't know whether it was a good idea or what, but it was between myself, Carl, Connor and Stelios, myself and Stelios defending the notion of liberalism, you know, things like the US Constitution, the product of liberalism, the US state, the founding fathers were all liberals. It doesn't have to, you know, inevitably degenerate, but I'm strawmanning the other guy's position. But yeah, this went on for a while. It was in multiple parts, and eventually we were just like, well, we've got to agree to disagree here. Then I had the psychology of horror with Proper Horror Show as well. So this was me, Harry and Connor with Proper Horror Show, who she kind of came in and featured on my episode of Contemplations. We all dressed up and talked about horror movies. So of course for Halloween, and so it was good fun. And then I did another one with both Dan and Bo. It turns out Dan's a big fan of space, and he actually had lots of great contributions here. Talking about some more James Webb telescope images and understanding them, as well as some of the physics behind it. I don't pretend to be an expert. And then there was another debate. We were feeling a bit debatey in this period, around November of 2023, between Carl and Connor and myself and Bo about whether society is going to collapse. Me and Bo said, no, of course not. We're going to trudge on and it's going to decline, but it won't collapse, because that's literally in no one's interest. And I don't believe in the notion that things have got so far that they're going to run away and you know, be beyond saving. And it's not me being, you know, necessarily optimistic. I'm a pessimist by disposition. I just think that if anything, it's even less likely to collapse now than it ever was. But there we go. You need to watch the thing to see the counter arguments, I suppose. Then I debated a vegan, David Rams. He has a YouTube channel. He's actually quite civil in debate, and you know, it's one of those ones where if you want to actually sit through a debate with a vegan, it's probably a good go-to. I did my best, although I feel like I could have done slightly better there. Then I spoke to Harry about genes, mutants and modern politics, and how genetics and voting have affected the world. Then I did a wholesome one in the lead up to Christmas, How Intelligent Are Animals, with Connor, where I'm trying to cheer, you know, people up before Christmas, all the depressing news. And then I had a very wholesome one with Stelios, What Makes Life Meaningful, where we talked about various psychological and philosophical perspectives on meaning. And, you know, we wanted you to have a nice wholesome Christmas. And talking of wholesome, I'll tell you what's not wholesome, me getting drunk on camera. And that is A Gentleman's Guide to Cocktails, where I use my experience of bartending and pass that on for New Year's Eve. And it was just an excuse to get the office drunk, basically. But it was good fun to do that. Not so much to record. It was actually hell to record. One of the most difficult things I've ever done, recording-wise anyway. Because the amount of faffing and prep and bringing people drinks off camera and things like that, I was worried that I didn't actually have enough time to record the whole damn video. So, yeah, I hope you enjoy that one. It is good fun. It doesn't need to be New Year's Eve to watch it. And then we had Lewis Brackpool in with Connor, Why You Should Read C.S. Lewis, where I'd not really read any C.S. Lewis, and they were basically trying to convert me to read him as well as to Christianity. And they were talking about the importance of his teachings and how they helped reinforce their Christian perspective, and being raised a dirty atheist and being very secular in my upbringing, being a scientist, obviously, I've not had much contact with that world, and it was interesting for me to learn from them. And then me and Stelios looked at some Chinese proverbs and looked at the wisdom contained within. It was good fun. Hopefully you can learn stuff about Chinese culture as well as some of the turns of phrases. I talked to Harry about Sigmund Freud and why I have criticisms of psychoanalysis. And then I did a deep dive on Buddhism with Rory, and we're basically explaining it to Connor because he felt like he didn't know very much about it, and he was sort of trying to pass it with Christianity and understand whether it's consistent or not. Then I did one with Dan and Callum about why the political compass questions are terrible, where we're basically explaining why the questions aren't very good. Then me and Harry and Stelios talked about what makes films good. Obviously, pretty self-explanatory again. Then me and Stelios discussed, how do you deal with bad ideas? Again, a very self-explanatory thing. Then I looked at how politicians try and manipulate you. I used Connor's sort of experience in the Westminster circles to give me practical examples of what I knew in theory and, you know, had my suspicions of. So that's a very useful one and a good one to learn if you like to keep a close eye on politics. Then we had some fun, me, Harry and Stelios, on understanding America, following the same vein as understanding Europe. I also have an Understanding the UK in the works for a Lad's Hour as well, so watch out for that one. Then I did another solo presentation about How Dystopian Is China, where I basically gave a summary of the Chinese state and how much control they have over their citizens. And then another one was Celios, 21st Century Manners and Etiquette, where I basically followed on from my conversation with Bo, except applying those laws to the 21st century, and I had a sort of Greek perspective, so I didn't become too British, as well as the fact that, you know, if Stelios, as a fellow European, has a similar perspective, there's a certain amount of universality we can tease out of what are basically my laundry list for how you should behave. And then the final one was with Bo about Ruby Ridge, and this was one that was very important to me because it's obviously a very good example of how the US government and the governments more generally aren't actually out for the welfare of their citizens, and in fact they had an active hand in murdering them. And so I feel like this is a nice one to end on, in a way, because, you know, I'm very anti-government, and it's sort of the quintessential example of a case study for being anti-government. And it's also, albeit quite a harrowing story, a good one to know about. So that's all 170. I had to kind of power through some of them so I didn't make this too long-winded, and I'm about to lose my voice. And yes, I'm about to share my bottle of champagne with the rest of the office, and I suppose I'm going to end on a bit of a toast. So thank you very much for you to watch this, and I hope you keep up with my work in the future. It has been a real honour to do it, and thank you very much for watching, and for the final time, goodbye.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games that's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.